following program is intended for mature audiences.
Get off the babysitter. Put on your pants. Come out with your hands up.
They used to bounce messages across the earth. Shows. Everyone in the old world had a show. Do you think there's still somebody out there? Sending shows? Who knows? Those are the planes of silence.
Savino Veritas.
Total fabrication.
The Gripes of Wrath. Truth, the half-truth, and nothing of the truth. Veritas News, now with Sal Manella.
Good evening, this is Sal Manella with the Veritas News. President derelict Trump's recent not-surprising announcement prompted parties close to the Mueller investigation to respond to the president's publicized intent to run in 2020, to advise him instead to run now, quote, and as fast and as far as your fat ass can take you, end quote. The recommendation by anonymous sources close to the Mueller probe has prompted the few remaining allies and loyalists in the White House to play back-to-back viewings of the recent Oscar-nominated film Get Out on movie nights in the White House. Despite President derelict Trump's obvious lack of intelligence, even he is disappointed in Betsy DeVos's lackluster performance as Secretary of Education. The president noted that DeVos's disastrous 60 Minutes interview aired the same night as the time changed. The president said, quote, "Hopefully, with our clock set back an hour to standard time, you know, people are forgetful. I bet millions of viewers forget to change their time and tuned in an hour too late," end quote. White House Press Secretary Sarah KFC Sanders, when asked if the president knew that Sunday's time change was not from daylight savings time to standard time, but rather from standard time to daylight savings time, said, quote, "President Trump always knows what time it is. We all know that by the time posting of tweets. And if anyone knows that better than anyone else in the world, it's President Trump. I think his saying that we all went back to standard time instead of daylight savings is honestly a way to throw Russian cyber bots and spies off track. In fact, I wasn't supposed to say that. It's classified. But you all keep asking, what has the president done to counter the Russians? And there you go." End quote. Despite President derelict Trump's hope that viewers missed Betsy DeVos's appearance on 60 Minutes, tens of millions did in fact watch in horror as the Secretary of Education displayed her lack of what she herself calls education. I asked DeVos for her appraisal of how the 60 Minutes episode went, and she said, quote, "It was a complete waste of a half hour," end quote. It's not clear if the Secretary's response was yet another show of her lack of education, or a sly, albeit cryptic, acknowledgement of the rumored scheme where Trump plans to cut hours to just 30 minutes. It's said that Trump believes the plan would destroy the government in half the time, but others suspect it's just his attempt at rendering CBS's 60 Minutes irrelevant. Additionally, on education, Betsy DeVos refused to respond to allegations that the president derelict has ordered schools to keep using social studies textbooks with the informational error printed in it that says in print she designed and sewed the first American flag, and that it was Trump who threw not a silver dollar, but gold piece across the Delaware in an attempt to assassinate former Vice President Joe Biden. Finally, Satirist Anonymous Daily, or SAD, spurred on by heights of great success because of Donald Trump's occupation in the Oval Office, ironically announced it will cease publication. Editor-in-chief Wud Defuck told Veritas News that the lifeblood of satire is hyperbole, exaggeration. When a lifelong aide to Trump, like John McKenty, who had to be escorted out of the White House by the Secret Service for, quote, "committing serious financial crimes," end quote, only to be immediately hired again by President Donald Trump as head of Trump's 2020 presidential campaign. There are no sensational scenarios left to the imagination that can top the insane reality, according to What the Fuck. This has been Sal Manila with the Veritas News. Now here's Tom Savino with Savino Veritas.
Savino Veritas, live from Burbank, California.
My commission as Secretary of State will terminate at midnight, March the 31st. And much work remains to respond to the troubling behavior and actions on the part of the Russian government. I close by thanking all for the privilege of serving beside you for the last 14 months. Importantly, to the 300 plus million Americans, thank you for your devotion to a free and open society, to acts of kindness towards one another, to honesty, and the quiet hard work that you do every day to support this government with your tax dollars. All of us, we know, want to leave this place as a better place for the next generation. I'll now return to private life as a private citizen, as a proud American, proud of the opportunity I've had to serve my country. God bless all of you. God bless the American people. God bless America.
Another one bites the dust. I brought Snap black and white, 'cause he took apart a picture that wasn't right. Pitch burning on a shining sheet, the only maker that you'd want to meet. The dying man living room, his shadow paces the floor. He'll take you out in the open door. This is not my life, it's just a fond farewell to a friend. It's not what I'm like, it's just a fond farewell to a friend who couldn't get things right. A fond farewell to a friend. He said, really, I just wanna dance. Couldn't even match perfect, it's a great romance. And I can deal with some psychic pain if it'll slow down my higher brain. Veins full of disappearing ink, vomiting in the kitchen sink. Disconnecting from the missing link. This is not my life, it's just a fond farewell to a friend. It's not what I'm like, it's just a fond farewell to a friend.
The fine wine of select gripes. Savino Veritas.
If you're still not sure what to do about guns, let me explain it to you using this awful cat. Now, before we start, we can all agree that banning cats won't get rid of all cats. And that a majority of people that do own cats are good people. Not every cat is an awful cat. And I happen to love a cute, cuddly cat. Ah, look at you. So cute. Such a cute little kitty.
Stupid, awful cat!
That was an awful cat. And that is what we're here to talk about. Let's say you're at the movies or church or school when out of nowhere, a cat pops up and claws you in the face. Suddenly, you might want to do something about this awful cat. Now, I live on a street that had one awful stray cat. And when no one did anything about it, one cat turned into dozens and they were all clawing people in the face. And it's all because my neighbor, the crazy cat lady, Mrs. Nra, was leaving out giant piles of treats for cats. So you explained to your neighbor that maybe it would be okay to have a couple rules for these cats. Now you would hope that a good neighbor would understand. But she freaks out and yells at you that you're trying to ban all cats. And you're just like, hey, I just don't want to get clawed in the face. I'm not banning anything. And they tell you maybe if you had your own cat, you'd feel better about it. And you say, I do have a cat. It's that cute cuddly one in my window. That's not the problem. The problem is these... God damn it! So as you can see, we have a cat problem. And all anyone wants is to put some rules in place to stop the excessive amount of awful cats on the street. But instead, I'm looking out my window and seeing even bigger, scarier lions, tigers, cheetahs, and AR-15s. That's not the same as a regular cat. But my crazy cat lady neighbor wants you to think it's okay for everybody to own a cheetah.
What?
No. Would you stop it, Mrs. Dra?
Really?
And sure, there are people out there with the proper knowledge and training to understand the responsibilities of owning a cheetah. But when the cheetahs keep ending up in schools clawing kids in the face, I don't think the answer is to put more cheetahs in the school. And I don't think the best way to buy a cheetah is to walk into Petco and go, hey, I want a cheetah. Oh, okay, here you go. And I think we all can agree that it's impossible to get rid of all cats. Which is good, because there's tons of cute, cuddly ones. But let's make some rules that limit and prevent how many awful cats wind up on our street. Less awful cats means less people clawed in the face. Sure, they still might get attacked by a dog or abducted by aliens, but let's handle this one problem at a time. And while this won't solve all cat problems, there's a good chance it'll help with a lot. Like, they had a similar cat problem over on Australia Street, and after they put rules in place, good people still owned good cats, but no one has gotten clawed in the face in over 20 years. And to all the teenagers on my street that are fed up with that cat lady, I'm really proud of you for being so brave. So I hope that explains to you the problem we're having with guns. Now I have a feeling that the comments on this video are gonna get a little out of hand. If you see that, could you help me out? Direct the conversation back to what laws can we put in place to get less guns in the hands of wrong people. It's important and something we should talk about constructively. How can we stop Mrs. Nra? She's a good lady, she's just a little too into her cats. Maybe we could get her to be interested in a new American pastime, like give everyone on the street free apple pie. There's a rally on March 24th in Washington, D.C., and I would love it if you could attend.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
Now, there's a couple larger contexts, right? In the last 8 days, I mean, they're panicked. The last 8 days, they don't want to talk about a wife beater in the White House. They don't want to talk about another mistress being paid off. They don't want to talk about a school massacre. And they don't want to talk about Russia indictments, right? So they have to expand the reach for the outrage. And they end up sounding like a chat room from Stormfront or any of these white nationalist sites. So what's interesting is for years, Fox has expanded the boundaries for conservatives and Republicans in terms of this is how offensive you can be. We will cover for you. I think this is an example. They're now taking their cues from Trump.
Yeah.
Trump is showing Fox News, you can be as racist as you want to be. And this was as racist as Laura Ingraham has ever been. And she's been doing this a long time. And we had a black president for 8 years.
Yeah.
She has upped it because Trump is sending the signals. All the guardrails are off.
Right.
No common decency. I will cover for you and you will cover for me. And we will go ahead. And all bets are off.
All bets are off.
Come fly with me.
This is from Inc.com. That's INC Incorporated. Inc.com. By Bill Murphy. A passenger sued Southwest Airlines for exactly $74,999. And it's totally brilliant. Here's why. Perhaps you've read about the 24-year-old Harvard dropout who sued Equifax in small claims court.
If I may be so blunt, who gives a shit?
Over last year's mammoth data breach and won, and whose company started funding other people's cases against the credit reporting giant. Now a Southwest Airlines passenger is suing Southwest for landing at the wrong airport.
Oh no, I pressed the wrong button again.
Contrast this to what happened when an airline in Sweden accidentally put 34 people on the wrong plane and flew them 600 miles away from their intended destination. Fortunately, they wound up in an IKEA in Burbank and everything was fine. Got free Swedish meatballs at IKEA. This is the kind of case we talked about back in law school.
Oh, you betcha, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued enough to dig up the Missouri-based court complaint in this case to learn more.
I want to know about this.
But I think the most important line in the entire filing is one some people have missed, and buried in the reasoning behind it is an important lesson for business leaders and entrepreneurs. Here's the line, quote, plaintiff is requesting damages in the amount of $74,999.99, and nothing more.
I'll object to that, Your Honor.
It's an odd number, right? It turns out there's a smart reason behind the decision to use it. Below, we'll go through the strange case, why the plaintiff is suing for exactly one penny under 75 grand, and what all this means for you as a business leader, if you are a business leader.
Now, let me see. What is it you call your job? Oh, yes, public relations. Sounds like something pretty dirty to me.
Bottom line up front, it's about understanding the rules of any contest or negotiation.
You don't even know what you're talking about. Try getting it out. Go ahead.
And identifying weaknesses that can enable a small player to take on an exponentially larger entity. It's about how, if you plan things right, David can always beat Goliath.
I don't care how big you are. Come out fighting.
I asked both plaintiff lawyer and Southwest Airlines for comments. Neither responded.
Is there no one else? Is there no one else?
The wrong airport. Quick, important fact. There are two airports servicing tiny Branson, Missouri. Branson Airport, which at the time had regular Southwest Airlines service, and the smaller Taney Counter Airport, with a runway barely half the length of Branson's.
I want a big one.
Somehow the captain and the first officer of Southwest Flight 4013 from Chicago mixed up the airports, which are only 7 miles apart, and landed at the wrong one. Nobody was physically injured, but at least one career was ended. And things could have been much worse. Passengers allegedly had to wait for 2 hours after landing before being allowed off, while the plane was filled with smoke. Quote, we landed very abruptly, and a pilot applied the brakes very hard. We smelled burnt rubber from the stop. Another passenger, not the plaintiff in the lawsuit as far as I know, told Forbes at the time, adding, quote, the mood is somber now that we realize we were 40 feet from the edge of a cliff, end quote. The passenger who sued Southwest, Troy Haynes, lived in the area and had flown into Branson Airport many times and says he realized well before the plane landed, even if the pilots didn't, they were at the wrong airport.
Oh, my mistake.
With a much smaller runway, end quote. He was, quote, immediately struck with fear and anxiety over potentially crashing, end quote.
My feelings exactly.
According to his lawsuit, and later, quote, suffered severe mental anguish, fear and anxiety, including a panic attack, which caused him to be removed from another airline prior to takeoff, end quote. That in turn led him to stop flying, which meant taking a job that didn't require travel, quote, at a substantially diminished salary, end quote. Why $74,999.99? Whether you think the lawsuit sounds reasonable or not, the obvious question is simple. Why not just round things up a penny and ask for $75,000? The reason stems from the fact that there are two U.S. court systems, federal and state. And even if a plaintiff files a suit in state court, the defendant can sometimes move it, quote, remove it in the legal language, end quote, to federal court. Most often the defendant does this by showing the plaintiff and defendants are from different states, but also that the amount at stake is more than $75,000. Suing for exactly one penny less than that blocks Southwest from removing the case to federal court.
I'll object to that, Your Honor.
Quote, it's clear the plaintiff in this case wants to be in state court and is therefore staying under the monetary threshold for removal to federal court, end quote, said Paul Geller, an experienced civil litigator and a partner at New York-based Robbins, Geller, Rudman, and Dowd, who is not involved in this case. Quote, while I don't necessarily ascribe to it, there is a general overlay in litigation that plaintiffs want to be in state court and defendants try to find any way to get to federal court through removal where permissible, end quote, Geller continued. It's not that suing for one penny under the cutoff is a rare strategy. And Geller went on to call the idea that state courts are always more plaintiff-friendly, quote, an urban myth, end quote. In many cases, he might be right. But here, several things make filing and staying in state court utterly brilliant, in my opinion. If you're a business owner, or you can even imagine being a party to a civil lawsuit, you want to pay attention. First, there's the fact that 5 months after this incident, June 4th, 2014, Southwest stopped flying into Branson. You can imagine why this might make sense, business-wise. Taney County Airport, where Branson is located, has only about 51,000 year-round residents, although it is a tourist destination.
Whoa, what?
Still, when Southwest left, along with Frontier soon after, the only other big airline that had served the area, the airport was hit hard. In fact, the last time news broke that Branson might be attracting a major carrier, it was all part of an elaborate April Fool's joke on the part of Sir Richard Branson.
I don't think that's funny.
Same last name as the city. The CEO and founder of now-defunct Virgin America. I don't know the exact economic impact of the airport's demise, but I'm sure it caused damage, as outlined in one newspaper's article, quote, flight options plummet at Missouri's new Branson Airport, end quote.
Who gives a shit?
I'm also confident that seeing your hometown dismissed as too insignificant for commercial flights has to sting, all of which might make the plaintiff want more Branson area jurors, while Southwest might want to do everything it can to try this case in as far away as possible. Again, trying to stay in state court isn't a rare strategy, but the extra reasons for that in this case are instructive, especially for business leaders. It's about seeing things from an adversary's perspective and understanding how small things that you take for granted can turn out to be big advantages in negotiations or even litigation. The closest federal court to Branson is 50 miles north of Springfield. That means if Southwest could remove the case to federal court, they'd be able to take it out of the county where this all happened, a community Southwest deemed not significant enough for its business. And this isn't just about the location of the courtroom. To my mind, it's about the makeup of the jury pool. Jurors closer to Springfield, Missouri might not feel one way or another about Southwest, but pull together a jury in Branson, and a reasonable lawyer might imagine you'd wind up with someone who knew someone who lost a job after Southwest and Frontier pulled out, or who is now inconvenienced by the lack of air service, or who doesn't like that the big airlines think the hometown is just a punchline. In other words, maybe you could assume a Branson jury would be predisposed to find for a plaintiff who lived in its town and isn't asking for all the money in the world, and find against the giant corporation with the out-of-state headquarters that allegedly did him wrong. So you'd want to keep things in state court in Branson. And because the plaintiff asked for one penny less than is required for a removal to federal court, Southwest seems stuck. Or else maybe this is all just about making it harder for Southwest lawyers and witnesses to travel to the trial in Branson. Because as we've seen, Southwest doesn't fly there anymore.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru.
A lady in New York once told me, she goes, I once complained about having no shoes until I met a man who had no feet. All right, duly noted. Is this how Delta handles all their customer service complaints? Sorry about your lost bag, sir, but you got your feet. Why don't you walk to Pittsburgh, pick it up? I fly a lot. I like to fly if it's a short flight and there's a time zone change involved, like if you go from Eastern to Central. Because if you're not expecting that change, it kind of messes with your head a little bit when you first look at your boarding pass. We depart at 12:30. We land at 12:35. This is awesome. I'm not even going to shut my phone off. Thanks, Quantum Leap Airlines. Sometimes you land early into a city before you're supposed to get there. The pilot will let you know that we landed early, tries to sound down to earth and cool about it, but you can tell by his voice. He wants everybody on board to know he just beat his personal best. Attention, everybody. The local time is 2:15. Just to refresh your memory, we weren't supposed to be here until 3 o'clock. All right. You're welcome. I'm awesome. It's always you're welcome when you get to a city before you're supposed to. It's never the opposite. Sometimes you feel like it should be the opposite. We got you to Detroit, 30 minutes ahead of schedule. Sorry about that. We're just gonna taxi around for a while. Don't look at anybody. Keep your windows up. I'll take a cross-country flight, direct flight from California to New York. Everybody at the end of it was tired, including the pilot. I say that because as we were descending, he actually forgot the name of the airline. He said these words verbatim. Thanks for flying with us here at... All right, appreciate your business. It's on the napkin. Take a look, down, right there, next to your gin and tonic. It's right there.
Since education is one of the themes of tonight's episode, it seems the person who compiled this list for Inc.com, INC.com, needs a little more education. According to Inc.com, these are the 6 worst airline customer service blunders in recent history. 1. April 2017, United Airlines, in a now infamous video, security dragged the man off an overbooked flight after he refused to give up his seat. He was injured and the airline apologized.
All right, I apologize. I'm really, really sorry. I apologize unreservedly. I offer a complete and utter retraction. The imputation was totally without basis in fact and was in no way fair and was motivated purely by malice. And I deeply regret any distress they have caused you or your family. And I hereby undertake not to repeat at any time in the future.
Could have added a little more information there, the fact that the man was a doctor and he had patients to see. 2. August 2017, British Airways, a man boarding a flight from London to Cape Town, noticed his seat had a urine stain. A flight attendant gave him wipes to clean it up and a blanket to sit on. His request for an upgrade was ignored. The airline apologized.
All right, I apologize. I'm really, really sorry. I apologize unreservedly. I offer a complete and utter retraction. The imputation was totally without basis in fact and was in no way fair comment and was motivated purely by malice. And I deeply regret any distress that my comments may have caused you or your family. And I hereby undertake not to repeat any such slander at any time in the future.
And offered points as compensation, but the man said he was not satisfied. Apparently, that man was Donald Trump. The urine stain was that of a Moscow hooker. The blanket was used for a cover-up. All that, according to Paul Manafort. 3, September 2017, Southwest Airlines. A woman told the flight crew she was allergic to another passenger's dogs. She asked to move seats, but the crew said she couldn't fly without a medical certificate. Now, who wrote this? She asked to move seats. Like, were they supposed to unscrew the seats and move them to different areas? She asked to move her seat? Perhaps? Methinks it was her seat. She asked to move her seat, but she didn't have a medical certificate. So what the hell does that mean? Explain.
I don't know.
She refused to leave, so police dragged her off the plane. Need more information. 4, October 2017, American Airlines. Black activist Tamika Malloroy was removed from a flight after the pilot overheard her arguing with a gate agent.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
Mallory, a black woman, said she felt, quote, disrespected, end quote, and, quote, targeted, end quote, by the pilot, a white man.
And don't call me Shirley.
Mallory later met with American Airlines CEO and civil rights leaders to discuss allegations of racial discrimination on the airline. 5, December 2017, Southwest Airlines again. A family bound for Disneyland was not allowed to board due to concerns their 6-year-old daughter might have lice. She did not. The family said the airline did not apologize or compensate them, but did offer to book them on another flight 2 days later. More information. Perhaps this family was Asian. Perhaps they ordered rice.
Oh my God!
On the flight. We need to know. 6, December 2017, American Airlines. 2 NBA basketball players seated in coach. Well, at least they weren't seated on coach. Seated in coach were forced to leave a plane after a flight attendant accused them of stealing blankets from the first class cabin. First class passengers had actually given the blankets to them. The airline apologized, and the athletes later flew first class on a different flight. Many holes in that story. I'd like to know more about that. There's no bra that can hold this porn star, Stormy Daniels. It hush up on old scandals. Spanked his buttocks with a fool. He was bare, tried her best so not to stare, Stormy Daniels. She had him wear her shoes and sandals, and paid off bigly by the boy. Bigly paid by the boy. When he went away, the blues left right on with him. But each time he returned, the old stock and bonds came with him. Now she cannot say if and when she met him, the non-disclosure's worth the sum. The non-disclosure's worth the sum. Can't go on now. Late night shows to give the blues, Stormy Daniels. Paid to cover up all the scandals, compounding interest more and more, compounding interest more and more.
Truth, the half truth, and nothing of the truth. Veritas News now with Sal Mannella.
Good evening, this is Sal Mannella with the Veritas News. Researchers find that the hidden cause of California's smog problem is not primarily from cars' carbon emissions, but rather the overabundance of fertilizer in the state's Central Valley. A long-term study by environmental scientists in California's UC Davis campus has concluded that the extensive use of cow manure used in agriculture in the state's Central Valley is the major cause of air pollution in the state. Car manufacturers expressing glee in hearing the news hope that this study will, quote, end the state's stringent automobile emissions standards, which are the strictest anti-smog regulations in the world, end quote. A Trump EPA spokesman, Ben Fume, said the news will now put California in its place, stating, ironically, that, quote, California's crazy emissions standards are finally exhausted, end quote. Not surprisingly, the voters of California's Central Valley are represented by Republican congressman and not-so-stealthy Russian operative Devin Nunes. Democrats and progressives note that Nunes's dud anti-FBI memo of last week, which was supposed to have shown anti-Trump bias by the world's intelligence community, did not pass the so-called smell test. The left-wingers until today could not identify what the smell was that permeated the Nunes memo, but given researchers' proof that smog is caused by cow manure from Nunez's district, have now identified the smell as being that of fertilizer. Democrat congressman and colleague of Nunez, Adam Schiff, was overheard saying, quote, "It's no surprise that the Nunez memo failed the smell test, as we now know that his entire district, like himself, is full of shit," end quote. In yet another cover-up, video and photographic images of President derelict Donald Trump entering Air Force One on a windy day show absolutely no hair growth from the back of his head. Previously, hair transplant surgeons have come forward en masse to verify, based on prior similar video images, that Trump has had hair transplant surgery that allows so-called real strands of hair to grow. But the recent images in question show no hair growth at all from the rear of his head. The public clamors now and wants to know, if he did have hair transplant plugs surgically implanted, why did they miss the back of his head? Proponents of the removal of Trump from the world stage by any means expressed hope that, using Trump's own words that expressed his wish for someone to assassinate Hillary Clinton, quote, "maybe one of those Second Amendment people," end quote, won't miss the back of his head. This has been Sal Manila with the Veritas News. Now here's Tom Savino with Savino Veritas.
That's case number 36 on the calendar in the matter of Sager versus England Myers.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Judge. Parties have been sworn in, Your Honor. You may be seated. Have a seat, please.
Ms. Sager, I assume it is this young man who is the son of a very dear friend of yours.
Yes.
And you've been sort of like a godmother.
Yes.
Your complaint alleges that it was necessary for him to go into a private school situation last year. And his mother found the defendant's school and thought it was an appropriate place for him. And you paid the tuition in advance.
For the 05-06 school year, yes, I did.
He entered school in September?
I believe that's when school started, yes.
And he left school when?
January 31st.
And he left school, according to you, because the school, you believe, was inappropriate for him?
Correct.
And in addition, Mr. England, or Ms. Myers, told him that he was no longer welcome there.
Yes, Mr. England did. He told me that he was no longer welcome there.
You want a refund of your tuition?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Mr. England and Ms. Myers say that this young man's own behavior caused him to no longer be welcome at the school, and in addition, he damaged some property there, so you're not entitled to a refund. Okay. What is this young man's name?
Tony.
Tony, would you step up here, please? Tony, before you went to Cornerstone, where did you go to school?
Pomo Elementary.
And you weren't doing well there?
No. No.
Tell me what happened when you went to Cornerstone.
When I went there, I was doing good and I was getting good grades. Then started getting worse and worse.
Your grades did?
Well, yes, the grades too.
Okay. Did there ever come a time, Tony, when you were put in a closed room?
Yes, Your Honor.
Tell me about that.
I guess I got in trouble from talking, and so they put me in this room.
Which How is big was the room, Tony?
Not very big. It was full of all this stuff, too.
What kind of stuff was it full of?
It was with camp food, some boxes, clothes.
Was it a closet?
Yeah, like a closet.
Did it have a window?
No.
Was there a chair in there?
Yes, there was.
Was there anything else other than a chair in there?
There was a table for me to work on.
Was there a light?
Yes, there was.
And a door?
Yes, there was.
I do have pictures.
I'd like to see it, please. Tony, do you remember the first time you were placed in this room?
Yes, I do.
Tell me about it.
When I first went in there, first it was really small, and so I wasn't really sure about it. And then when I went in there...
Was it a different room?
It was the same room.
Same room. Okay, so there's an old TV in there and a wheelchair and some canned food. It's a storage closet.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Any other children put in the storage closet?
Yes, there was other children. There was like two other children.
But not at the same time you were?
No.
So they sort of used that room as a quiet room?
Yes, Your Honor.
Did the door work? Could you open the door and get out?
When I first went in there, I could, but after the other days I went in there, it locked. The door handle was broken.
How long did you stay in the room, Tony?
For that one day, for the whole half the day.
How many times were you placed in the room?
5-6 days.
Always because of behavior?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because you were talking, not doing the right thing?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where are you in school now, Tony?
Palma Elementary.
So you're back in your old school?
Yes, Your Honor.
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Doing better?
Yep.
Were you happy to leave Cornerstone?
Yes, I was.
Tell me why, Tony.
Because I didn't really like it, and I got locked in that door, and they yelled a lot and all that stuff.
When you were put in this storage closet, Tony, how frequently did somebody come in to check on you?
Every few hours.
Who would come in?
Mrs. Myers.
What would she say to you when she came in?
Did you do your work? Do you got to go to the bathroom?
Okay. Why don't you sit down for a minute, Tony? If I need you again, I'll call you. Thank you. Okay. That's really why you wanted out of school. Okay. Miss Myers, I'm going to start with you. How long have you been at Cornerstone?
I came at the end of October of 05.
Where did you come from?
From Hilltop.
Hilltop is what?
Hilltop is another private school in the community.
How long had you been at Hilltop?
Off and on for 22 years.
In what capacity?
As a supervisor and teacher.
Did you graduate?
Yes.
When?
In 2002 is when I completed all my credits.
So you worked at Hilltop without being a college graduate?
Yes, because our curriculum is accredited.
But you worked there without having a degree in education?
Yes.
At Hilltop. What is your degree in?
I have an associate's.
So you don't have a bachelor's degree in education?
No, I do not, because our curriculum doesn't require it.
Is this a school for special needs children?
No, it isn't. The curriculum comes from Texas, fully accredited by California's educational system.
I didn't ask you for the brochure answer. I asked you for the answer to my question. Is the Cornerstone Christian School a school for children with special needs?
No.
But you accept children with special needs?
Yes, we do.
What special training do you have to deal with children who have special needs?
I have an ACE.
You don't have anything.
I have an ECE certificate.
You have nothing. I'm talking about the school. You have an associate's degree that wouldn't permit you in most jurisdictions to teach at any school. I'm asking you what special training anyone at the school other than yourself, because you have no educational background to treat children with special needs. You don't have a bachelor's degree in education, and you don't have a master's degree in education, and certainly you don't have a degree to teach children with special needs. So what is the educational background of the teacher who is teaching Tony?
We do have a training course,
Tony,
that we go to.
Tony, the teacher, Miss, what is her educational background?
Same as mine.
So she has an associate's degree?
I think so, yes.
I would sue you for a lot more than the return of this tuition. How dare you? How dare you take children who have special needs? Clearly, this is a young man who came from a school where he wasn't functioning appropriately because he had certain behavioral problems. You took him into your school. You have absolutely no background in children with special conditions or handicapping conditions. You don't even have the requisite credentials to teach in most jurisdictions children who don't have special needs. There is no issue. You have anything to say to me, sir?
Yes, I do.
Judge Judy continues in a moment.
To take a child for whom they have done zero testing.
No, we tested him.
Who tested him?
I did.
You have a high school degree, sir.
And later today.
Look at his face. It's got attitude, which is a good thing, but it's got to be channeled. That's what I'm here to do, Brian.
Yes,
channel.
Real cases, real people. Judge Judy. Connie Sager says school officials Jeff England and Elizabeth Myers owe for the return of her nephew's tuition. Connie claims the boy was locked in a closet as punishment.
I'm going to give you 30 seconds to tell me first, what is your educational background?
I graduated from high school, and in this curriculum, we go through special training. We are not teachers, we're supervisors. This is an accredited, it's accredited from the state of California. We do not teach the kids. It's a self-teaching curriculum. It's an individual curriculum for each student to work at their individual pace. I don't know what your definition of a special student is, but I will tell you that the only special need he needed was to be able to sit down and work at his pace. He couldn't keep up with other kids. So
Mr.
our school
England,
isn't
Mr. England, let me stop you right there,
punitive.
Sir. Let me stop you right there, sir. Someone who has a high school education does not have the credentials to tell me or to tell anybody who happens to have a little bit more than a high school education what a special needs child needs. I worked in the family court for 25 years. I know about children with special needs. I know about children who have ADHD. I know about children who have learning disabilities. I know children who have behavioral problems. And if what you're telling me is that you believe that your school and the people who teach, and I use that word very, very loosely, or who guide.
Guide very, very loosely.
People who have no more than an associate's degree recently acquired have the skill to take a child for whom they have done zero testing.
No,
zero,
we tested him.
Who tested him?
I did.
You have a high school degree, sir.
With the curriculum that we use.
You have a high school degree.
And you're not even asking about the curriculum.
Listen, I don't care about your curriculum.
That's just it.
I don't
you're
care about
it on
Mr. England.
Thing.
Mr. England, I'm
Sorry,
telling you,
wrong.
Sir.
You're wrong.
Mr. England, this is not a give and take situation,
yes,
sir.
Yes, it is, because you're not listening.
No, it's not a give and take situation, sir. I don't think that I have to listen to nonsense about two people who have a bare minimum education where you couldn't get a job in most governmental institutions, taking a child with clearly a behavioral special need and putting him in a closet that had stored food with a table and a chair and told him to work there during the day, and somebody who worked for 22 years to get an associate's degree went in and said, do you need to go to the bathroom? Judge him for the plaintiff in the amount of $2,750. That's all. Step out.
Thank you.
That's it. It's over.
Yes.
Get rid of this woman. I wanted to get rid of him a week ago.
Putting him in this room was totally unacceptable.
But you know what? I'm rid of her.
Anybody who's putting their child in a private school needs to check it out thoroughly. And
this week on Han and Ann.
Anna and I consider ourselves bright, professional women.
We have advanced degrees, we work in journalism, and we enjoy the finer things in life.
But lately, we've been talking nonstop about whether we can be classy, intellectual women, but also be really, really into watching The Bachelor.
I'm obsessed.
This season, a nice but vanilla man named Ari is seeking the love of his life from a crowd of 29 eligible women, four of whom are called Lauren. Throughout all this, we've been asking ourselves a lot of questions.
What's actually happening in our heads while we're watching The Bachelor? Is it good for us in some way? Or are we damaging our brains?
Is it bad for women? Is it bad for America?
And if it is bad, why does it feel so good?
I'm Han.
And I'm Ann.
And we're in
Indiana!
We gotta pick these up.
They don't tell you about this part of the journey.
In a delightful turn of events, Indiana University Bloomington allowed us to use their MRI scanner to measure Hannah's brain activity while watching The Bachelor.
An fMRI is a type of MRI scan. In this case, we take advantage of the fact that our hemoglobin has iron, which is ferromagnetic.
Essentially, the scanner uses a powerful magnet to track when oxygen-rich blood enters certain parts of your brain.
So basically, if a part of your brain is active and it needs oxygen, it needs fuel, mm-hmm. your body's gonna send more blood to that area, carrying more oxygen
right.
to it. And since blood has iron in it, this thing that can detect metals mm-hmm. is going to basically say, hey, there's a lot of metal over here. Check out this area
right.
of the brain.
That's one way of thinking about it, okay. yeah.
Yeah, that's like the idiot's way of thinking about it. Has anyone ever asked you to scan their brains while watching The Bachelor before?
No, this is the first.
Will we be able to see Hannah's brain cells dying while watching The Bachelor?
Unfortunately, no.
I just want to see her brain rotting away to nothing.
We're going to see which parts of Hannah's brain are active while watching specific scenes from The Bachelor. We chose clips that she said evoked certain feelings in her, like an intense dislike of a character.
I'm not sure what I'm gonna say, but whatever I do, I have a feeling it's gonna be perfect.
We also chose neutral scenes to compare them to. Basically, any moment of Ari talking about himself seemed to do the trick.
Still doing okay?
Yep. We're watching my brain. Can you find out what's wrong with my personality?
No one can find out.
We realized this isn't a great experiment. We don't have a well-defined research question. We could have standardized the clips better, and we're only testing one person. But nonetheless, we're fulfilling one woman's dream of seeing her brain on The Bachelor.
So what percentage of this is filled with reality television?
Greater than the desirable amount, probably.
While we were waiting for the results of my brain scan, we wanted to learn more about the bigger picture, so I met with Brenda Weber. She's a gender studies professor at Indiana University Bloomington, and she knows a lot about reality TV.
There are a lot of stories about finding true love. My interest is more, why do we need to keep telling that story to ourselves? This notion of a companionate marriage where you find your soulmate who's the consuming presence is very much a construction of the modern moment.
Do you think that reality TV is harming society?
I think it's about what does it mean to watch something mindfully. It's not so much what you're consuming as how you're consuming it.
So watching reality TV isn't going to necessarily make you a better or worse person, but it gives you the option of reacting in a positive or a negative way.
I love critical thought.
After talking to Brenda, it was time to go back to the brain lab and get the results of my fMRI. All right, Dr. Newman, the results are in.
It looks as though you may have been napping during the neutral pictures.
It turns out every time Ari was on screen, I entered a state of blissful nothingness.
He's just not for me, I guess.
No.
Find the one, though.
He will. That's not you.
But whenever I saw Crystal, one of the greatest Bachelor villains of all time, it was a different story.
It looks like my brain's on fire.
It really does.
When Hannah watched clips of Crystal, her amygdala lit up. It's a center for emotional processing and is associated with anger. Part of her brain related to regulating emotion was also active.
So I was trying to suppress it.
You were trying to control it.
Part of me was like, I don't want to just hate a woman for having a sexy baby voice.
Hans striatum was also busy while watching Crystal. It's a part of the brain's reward network and is associated with addiction.
So I love it.
So you love it and hate it all at the same time. Or at least you're becoming addicted to it, possibly.
Oh, no.
All right, so give it to us straight, Dr. Newman. Was this a good experiment?
There were some issues with the methodology, but again, the idea is a good idea.
Yay!
We've heard so much about what reality TV does to people who watch it, but what's it like for people who appear on these shows? What's this? Is this a date card? Hannah and Anna, let's pick each other's brains. Charlene Joint. Who's Charlene Joint?
Charlene Joint is only the smartest, prettiest, and coolest Bachelor contestant of all time. She was on Juan Pablo's season, and she dumped him. It was amazing. So although you sadly did not get engaged to Juan Pablo on your season, do you think there's something about that setting which is very conducive to falling in love very quickly?
I think that the setting makes you really focused on a single person. You spend a lot of your time talking about him, how he might feel about you, how the other girls feel about him, how hot he looks today. It's tunnel vision. You don't have anything else to focus on. Like, I challenge anyone to go on that show and stay for a while and not feel some feelings for the lead.
Can you talk actually a little bit about like what those emotions are that you're feeling when you're on the show? Because it must be an extremely stressful situation.
I think one thing people don't realize is how sleep deprived you are. You're often not allowed out of where you're staying. And you're meant to grate with each other. I was in a constant state of kind of like, you know, anger, I guess, a mild anger.
Sometimes when women leave the show of their own accord or they don't get a rose, it seems like the thing they're most sad about is leaving the friends they've made. Do you think that The Bachelor is actually a beautiful story about female friendship in a situation where women are supposed to be competing with each other?
You bond in a way that, like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, you don't even have to have been on the same season. It's like you've gone through this really weird thing together, and you're continuing to go through this weird thing together.
Charlene, it's been such a pleasure to speak to you, and we just wanted to know, Charlene, would you accept this rose?
Of course, Hannah and Anna. I would be delighted to. Yeah.
Yay!
Why does this never get old?
Anna, I've loved every second of this journey with you.
Anna, I have one last question.
Yeah, Hannah?
Will you marry me?
No. But if you have a pop culture question, reach out. We'd love to hear from you. She's just not for me.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
Everything got trend, everything got the truth.
Humorous, writer, raconteur, mystic, and parallel parking expert, Thomas Savino. The fine wine of select gripes. Savino Veritas, live from Burbank.
I may be joking, but I'm never kidding. Join me each Thursday at 11 p.m. right here on SRN.
Meeting is adjourned. Oh, I am sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end.
By George, he's got it. It is the end.
Now, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.